You're listening to Clinical Conversations. I'm your host, Joe Elia. Dr. Christy Koenig is Medical Director for Emergency Medical Services in the County of San Diego, which, as of this afternoon, Saturday, March 28th, had about 420 confirmed COVID-19 cases with 6 deaths. The county is lucky to have her, if I may say so, because she's co-edited a definitive textbook on disaster medicine, and arguably the novel coronavirus epidemic qualifies for entry into that club. Dr. Koenig is Professor Emeritus of Emergency Medicine and Public Health at the University of California, Irvine School of Medicine. And she was also, I should say, a longtime contributor to NEJM Journal Watch Emergency Medicine. Welcome to Clinical Conversations, Dr. Koenig.
Thank you very much for having me.
So what are you seeing there in San Diego?
Well, we're very concerned in San Diego, as is the rest of the country. And we're taking a three-pronged approach on the ground in San Diego. Number one is to flatten the epidemic curve. Number two is to increase surge capacity for our healthcare system. And number three is to focus on using an incident command system to coordinate all of our needs and resources. And I can explain each of those in more detail if you'd like.
I recognize the incident command. I recognize it from having looked at your textbook a few years back. So go ahead.
Yes, in San Diego, we were very early to implement what's called NPI, non-pharmaceutical interventions, to try to spread out the diseases over time so that we don't have as great a chance of hitting a peak number of diseases early on, which could exceed our healthcare capacity. This is the so-called flattening of the epi curve I'm sure people have seen, even on the news. People are getting educated in epidemiology these days.
Yeah.
And the idea with that is we won't necessarily decrease the total number of patients, but if we can spread patients out over time, we can potentially continue to care for everybody in our healthcare system. And this is not only the COVID patients, this is also our regular emergencies. We know that emergency departments are crowded on a day-to-day basis. And so by using these interventions, which are called things like social distancing, although it's not really social distancing, it's more physical distancing, right? We still can keep in contact with people. And other types of interventions to try to prevent the rapid spread of the disease, we can make a huge difference. It's complicated because we may not see the effects for a week, 2 weeks, or even more, because there are already people in our communities who are incubating the disease that have not had symptoms yet or not. Some people never have symptoms, but who have not presented yet to our healthcare system. The second thing would be for surge capacity. And we've developed a concept about 20 years ago, along with my colleague, Major General Donna Barbish, for the 3S concept of surge capacity, which is stuff, staff, and structure. And we find it very helpful to organize everything around stuff, staff, and structure. And I can explain that in more detail if you'd like.
Yes, and I would guess that the stuff is going to include things like masks.
Absolutely. Okay. And ventilators and N95 respirators and surgical masks and other types of PPE, personal protective equipment, are very important in an epidemic of this nature. But one of the challenges is that the news media and the politicians love to count stuff, right? You can see it, you can show it on TV, you can touch it, you can count it. But one of my famous lines is, ventilators don't take care of patients. Stuff is important, but it's not sufficient. And so while we do need certainly to protect our healthcare workers on the front lines and to have things like ventilators to care for patients in this setting, the stuff component of the 3S is not enough. So we also need the staff, which is all of us, the people. And we do know that some people, unfortunately, will get sick and even die. And some people will not be able to come to work because they may be caring for a relative or other reasons. So we have to account for probably maybe perhaps 30% of people will not be able to come to work or not be willing to come to work. And we also need specialists in the staff. So it's not just the total number, but we need people with specialized expertise, for example, infectious disease specialists, critical care specialists. And then the third component is the structure, and that is the physical location where we care for patients. And what we're seeing now is we're being very innovative, and I think actually this is going to help us after we get through all of this to have better capacity in our healthcare system. We're seeing alternate care sites develop. We're seeing field hospitals. We're seeing the military. For example, the Mercy just arrived in Los Angeles today, I believe. We're seeing things like tents being put up outside hospitals to do screening. In San Diego, we're also looking at behavioral health care centers outside hospitals. We're seeing telemedicine, telehealth popping up. So lots of things for the structure piece as well, where we care for patients. So again, stuff, staff, and structure is very helpful to organize all the components we need to increase the surge capacity of the system.
We've chatted before when your the second edition of your textbook came out, and you, or maybe it was Dr. Schultz, mentioned that the third edition should include a chapter on how to prepare oneself to participate in responding. Do you have any advice for clinicians now about to face the challenge of a surge in demand?
Yes, we definitely need clinicians. And one of the most challenging things about this event is the psychological piece of it. People who are working on the front lines are seeing their colleagues get sick and unfortunately likely even die. And it's very difficult. Or they may have a situation where they don't have enough resources, and we're used to taking care of everybody. So keep focused on what we're doing to take care of patients and take care of your own mental health. There's lots of resources online for mindfulness and other types of techniques you can use. Make sure that even though we're physically distancing, that we're still connecting socially with others.
When I was going through your textbook again, I noticed the mention of the incident command system. Talk a little bit about that, if you would.
An incident command system is necessary to coordinate all of the resources that we need. What happens is people want to help and they have good ideas and they try to work outside the established system, and we're seeing it everywhere. It takes up people's time to respond to well-meaning requests, spontaneous volunteers, spontaneous donations, as opposed to if everything can be funneled into the incident command system, it can be coordinated as needed to help manage the disaster. And these are systems that are practiced both in hospitals. We usually use something called the hospital incident command system, mm-hmm. in the pre-hospital setting, in all levels of government, and there are liaisons between the various incident command systems so that you can coordinate and do something that's on a regional, statewide, and even national basis that otherwise would be overwhelming to try to manage.
At the beginning of an incident like this, what would you do typically with the incident command system? Would you put out something immediately saying, look, we understand you'd like to volunteer, or if you want to volunteer, if you want to bring food, masks, or whatever?
One of the portions of the incident command system would be the logistics section. Mm-hmm. So the incident commander could refer a volunteer idea to that section who could decide how to best integrate it into the overall response.
The U.S. is in mitigation mode right now as opposed to trying to prevent the entry of the virus into the country.
Actually, I wouldn't agree with that.
Oh, completely. You wouldn't? Okay. So tell me how I'm wrong there.
The U.S. has different phases right now of the disease. So, for example, in New York and some other emerging areas at the time we're making this recording, such as New Orleans and Chicago, mm-hmm. and Los Angeles, they're a little bit farther along that epidemiologic curve in terms of the rise in cases. Mm-hmm. But there are some parts of the United States where there are very few cases, or at least few that we know of. And so they're probably earlier on in time. I would say in San Diego, for example, we're not quite on the same upslope as they are in some other parts of the country like New York. In places where there's widespread community transmission, certainly we need to do mitigation. And that's probably most places, to be honest, because we see this disease being spread in asymptomatic or minimally symptomatic people. And that's why this stay-at-home message, the social distancing, is so important to flatten that curve. But we also still need to isolate people that are sick. We need to identify them and isolate them so that we can prevent rapid spread by known people who are sick. So we're doing more than just mitigation. We're also, well, I'll just say we're doing identification and contact tracing to prevent spread of disease from known cases in addition to the mitigation.
So over the past month, I mean, you started the month with one case in San Diego, and now we're up to many more than that. What have you seen over that time, Dr. Koenig, that has changed your mind?
You know, it's been very interesting in San Diego because we've had several disasters within the disaster, if you will. Let me explain what I mean. We have the local military base, Miramar. You may have seen on the news that when we were repatriating people from Wuhan, they came into a federal quarantine. So we've been collaborating, closely collaborating, and have a strong relationship with the federal entities such as the CDC and what's called the ASPR, the Assistant Secretary for Preparedness and Response, which is located in HHS at the federal level, and also the state, because in the U.S., the way things are organized, it's local to state to federal in terms of how the resources work. And so we had people coming back from Wuhan that were on quarantine, and we helped support the quarantine on the base. And we actually, I've actually been standing a little bit more than 6 feet away from a patient who ultimately turned out to be positive from that repatriation. So we have systems in place where we have transported patients who became infected or became positive from the base to hospitals and potentially back. And then after we had that mission, which really helped us to get systems in place, we had people coming from the cruise ships, and same thing, where we had positive cases in that cohort. And we were able to make sure that those cases did not spread out into the community and that those patients got care. And ultimately, once their quarantine, 14-day quarantine was finished, they were able to return to where they live. So that gave us a lot of experience, and we're still actually having more cruise ships coming into San Diego and managing that along with our federal partners. So it's incredibly complicated, but it's given us a lot of experience with how to manage this. In addition, you mentioned at the beginning my role in EMS. We put in place screening so that when somebody calls 911, initially several weeks ago when it was more relevant to ask the travel history, we were asking about travel from China and some of the other hotspots, and we were identifying people potentially infected at the level of dispatch so that when our paramedics responded, they were already wearing the appropriate personal protective equipment. And when they picked up the patient for transport, they were notifying the hospitals ahead of time, hey, we're coming in with someone who might have COVID, and the hospitals were wearing PPE, and oftentimes seeing them, if they were stable enough, outside of the emergency department first to make sure that we weren't transmitting infection to others.
So nothing that you've seen so far has changed your mind about the approach that should be taken. Would it be fair to say that it's reinforced?
One of the most challenging things is that the recommendations are changing very frequently. And that's because this is a novel virus. It's new, and we are learning. I've actually been following this since December, believe it or not. And I can remember the first report was, oh, it's not transmitted from person to person, which I didn't believe. Oh, it's not transmitted to healthcare workers, which I didn't believe. But things have been evolving over time in terms of PPE recommendations. Initially, it was very helpful to identify people traveling from certain international hotspots. Now there's such widespread disease that's less useful at this point. So it is a challenge, and there are things that are changing. But one thing that we've worked with for all infectious diseases is the concept of the three I's, the identify, isolate, inform. For people working in hospitals, we want to immediately identify patients who are potentially infected. And because this is a disease contagious from person to person, we then would immediately isolate them. And the third I would be to inform both public health and your hospital infection prevention personnel.
Yes, I saw that you have written a paper on the application of the three I's to the epidemic. I'm going to put a link to that on the website.
Thank you. And the 3I concept actually developed during the Ebola outbreak in 2014. The idea is that we don't necessarily think in our day-to-day work about the potential for a patient to be infectious to the point where we could contract the disease or other people in the waiting room could contract the disease. And we have to think about that immediately in something like this epidemic so that we can immediately isolate and protect the patient from exposing both healthcare workers and other patients.
As a country, what do you think we could be doing more of or less of at this juncture?
It's important to know that every single person in this country is on the front lines of this epidemic, and every single person's actions are important to help us stomp out this disease. If you are a non-healthcare person, just staying home and washing your hands, as simple as that sounds, can be incredibly helpful, as I talked about earlier, for flattening that epidemiologic curve. So everybody has an essential role in the entire country. And as healthcare workers, I would encourage everyone to keep focused. Again, the approach we're taking in San Diego is this three-pronged approach of the interventions to flatten the curve, coupled with increasing the surge capacity and making sure we work within an incident command system structure.
I know it's hard to look into the future. How do you think COVID-19 might change clinical practice? Do you see any indication that it might?
Absolutely. Once we get through this, I think we're going to have a much better healthcare system. It's amazing the collaboration and the innovation we've had in such a short time. Things are happening you never would have thought could have happened. I mentioned earlier telehealth as an example, increasing behavioral health resources, increasing resources for the homeless. There are incredible collaborations happening. We've had meetings with all the chief medical officers of our 20 hospitals, including VA and military in our county. We've had meetings with all the CEOs of all our hospitals, along with the board of supervisors and the chief medical officer of the county. This kind of cooperation and collaboration would not have happened if it weren't in the face of a crisis.
Is there one essential lesson that you want clinicians to take as they're about to face this?
Keep focused. We will get through this. If we organize our actions and our thinking, we can save lives. You are the heroes. You are on the front lines, and we thank you for everything you're doing every day.
Well, I want to thank you for your time today, Dr. Koenig, and I wish you good luck in the coming days.
Thank you very much. Stay safe.
Thank you. That was our 261st episode. Its predecessors are all searchable and available free at podcasts.jwatch.org. We come to you from Physicians First Watch and NEJM Journal Watch, all part of the NEJM group. My executive producer is Kristen Kelly, and I'm Joe Elia. Thanks for listening, and stay healthy.